is in destruction. So wal asr innal insana lafi khusr illa alladhina amanu, except for the one who brings iman, wa amilus salihat, and who does good deeds, wa tawasaw bis sabri, and who exhorts others to sabr, wa tawasaw bil haqq, wa tawasaw bis sabr. So now wa tawasaw bil haqq, that means you're exhorting other people towards Allah, and you're exhorting other people to keep calm and to keep, you know, to do sabr or to be patient. So that means some sort of tabligh is wajib upon each one of us. And we are all in that situation. Either we're husbands or we're, you know, sons or we're friends, where we can actually, or we have to actually invite others. If you're a parent, then you have to invite your children. So in some degree, everyone has to do some sort of tabligh. And then there is specific tabligh. And that tabligh is, you know, learning the deen and then teaching the deen, the specifics of the deen, the tafsir and the hadith and the fiqh and Arabic grammar and the history, all these things is specific hadith. So generally ulama have said that this tabligh, this specific tabligh, is not wajib on everyone, only a few people. But this exhorting your friend, your brother, your child, your wife, this is something that all of us, this type of tabligh, all of us have to do. And all of us do this in some capacity or the other. So I remember that there's many people who are not that religious. You know, they pray only on Fridays. But then again, they do tabligh on their children. That Friday, you also have to come with me to the masjid. So in other words, he's doing some sort of tabligh to his own children. But this other tabligh, where you learn the deen, and then you teach the deen, and you create scholars, this is a higher level. And this is something about which the Prophet ﷺ and the Quran is replete with ayahs, and there's ahadith which are many in number. So that is why those who learn the deen, those who become scholars, right? And not everyone has to become a scholar, but the one who becomes a scholar, there's many rewards for that person. The Prophet ﷺ has said that the level of an alim, فَزَلُّ الْعَالِمِ عَلَى الْعَابِدِ, the level of the alim over the abid, the worshipper, is like my level over the least one among you. So that's the level of the person who learns the deen. In another hadith, the Prophet ﷺ said, فَقِيهٌ وَاحِدٌ, one scholar, أَشَدُّ عَلَى الشَّيْطَانِ مِنْ أَلْفِ عَابِدٍ, he is more severe on the shaitan than 1,000 worshippers. So this learning the deen carries a lot of reward. You reach to such a level in the eyes of Allah, then normal people cannot just come close to it. That is why Allah Ta'ala says in the Quran, هَلْ يَسْتَوِي الَّذِينَ يَعْلَمُونَ وَالَّذِينَ يَعْلَمُونَ, that can those who know, who have the knowledge, be equal to those who don't have the knowledge? There's no way. So people of knowledge, the scholars, if they are truly the scholars, then their value in the eyes of Allah is just immense. In a very famous hadith, the Prophet ﷺ said, and from this hadith you will understand the level and the status of an alim. The Prophet ﷺ said, Al-ulama'u warasatul anbiya, that the scholars are the heirs of the anbiya, of the prophets. So this type of tabligh, this type of staying back and learning the deen and teaching the deen to others, carries a lot of reward. In a hadith it comes that when Allah is happy with somebody, somebody does a very good thing which makes Allah happy, Allah makes a house for him in Jannah. And when a scholar does a similar thing which makes Allah happy, Allah Ta'ala dwells a city for him in Jannah. Allahu Akbar. So what is the level? You cannot compare the scholars to a normal Muslim. So that is why it is a very, very big reward for us to become scholars. And it's a very big sa'ada, actually, to become a scholar. That is why those people who became scholars, they gave a lot of sacrifice. That if even have to, even if we have to sacrifice a lot, we will still go ahead and become the alim of Islam. So Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah was a very big sheikh of his time. He had a student who had learned this, that there's a lot of reward in becoming an alim, right? The Prophet ﷺ said that once the Prophet ﷺ was making dua, "Oh Allah, have mercy on my khulafa." Khulafa are the subordinates, right? In the number two. So the Prophet ﷺ made dua, "Oh Allah, have mercy on my khulafa." And this dua the Prophet ﷺ made was loud. So one of the companions, he heard this dua, he asked the Prophet ﷺ, "Oh Prophet of Allah, who are your khulafa?" And the Prophet ﷺ said, "Those people who learn the hadith and then they teach the hadith, these are my khulafa." Allah Akbar. So just imagine the level of these scholars, the scholars of tafsir and hadith and fiqh. These are the people who have very high levels in Jannah. So there was a young man who came in the company of Ibn Taymiyyah, had a lot of energy, was very, very mentally prepared to become an alim, to become a scholar. And he would come and he would stay with the sheikh for many, many hours. And he would make sure that he's doing more than other students and all of that. In the meanwhile, the king, he asked Ibn Taymiyyah rahimahullah to give a certain fatwa. And Ibn Taymiyyah refused the king, that this is against Sharia and I cannot give this fatwa. The king became upset and the king put him behind bars. So he was jailed for not giving fatwa according to the king's wishes. After 3 or 4 days, this young man, he went to the king's court and he started crying there. And he was crying in such a way that everybody in the court felt very bad for him. Somebody even told the king that, "My lord, look at him. He looks like he's very needy. So fulfill whatever wish he has." So the king asked him, "What is your wish?" And he said, "My wish is to be jailed." And the king said, "What? I have never, ever heard in my life that somebody has come here to ask for this request. They put me behind bars, put me in the jail." So the king said, "This is what you want?" He said, "Yes." So the king asked, "Why?" And he said, "You know what? You have put my sheikh, who's teaching me hadith, in jail. It has been 3-4 days and I have not learned hadith. And I fear that I will be away from the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ. So I can stay in the jail and I can live on meager resources, but I cannot stay away from the hadith of the Messenger ﷺ. So you put me in jail so that my sabak is done regularly." Allah. So people who understood the status of an alim, they gave a lot of sacrifice to become an alim. Shah Abdul Qadir Raipuri rahimahullah, he's a very big sheikh in Hindustan, was a very big sheikh of Hindustan. When he was young, he decided that he wants to become an alim. So he looked at all the madrasa in India, and he came to the conclusion that there is one madrasa where he will go and he will study, because all of the teachers there are very pious, very high in status, very knowledgeable. So he went to that madrasa. And when he went there for admission, they saw that this man is very keen to learn, and this young man is, you know, very pious and muttaqi and all that. So they said, "Well, we can give you admission, but there's only one problem. We don't have food for you. All these students who are here, the people living around the area, they actually give food for the children. Now we've taken them to such an extent that we cannot ask them for any more food. So if you can make your own arrangements for food, then we can teach you. So he said, fine. I mean, my only purpose is to learn Hadith and Quran. And I will make my own arrangements. So he started studying. And he was a poor man. And he had traveled long distance to come to that madrasa. So he had no money. What was his arrangement for food? For one whole year, he would go at night in, you know, the vegetable market. The vegetable market is closed at night. But there will be, you know, some vegetables on the floor. And they will be very dirty. He would pick them up and he would wash them. And then he would eat those raw, dirty vegetables. And he did that for 1 year before the madrasa allowed him food in the madrasa. So people gave so many sacrifices for the deen of Allah, because they understood what a high level it is to become an alim. And the Prophet ﷺ has praised the alim. The Prophet ﷺ said, when somebody goes to learn the deen, when he walks, the angels, they spread their wings under the feet of that person out of respect. This is the level of the person who just walks towards learning the deen. So we think that, you know, the scholar is a very poor man. He's nothing, but in the eyes of Allah, Allahu Akbar. There is no one even close to that person. So that is why becoming a scholar is a very, very big thing. And Allah Ta'ala mentions here, وَلْتَكُمْ مِنْكُمْ أُمَّةٌ يَدْعُونَ إِلَى الْخَيْرِ. There should be some people among you who will invite others to the khair, to the good. يَأْمُرُونَ بِالْمَعْرُفِ. Bid what is fair, وَيَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ, and forbid what is unfair. Shah Waliullah Muhaddis Dehlvi Rahimahullah is a very big sheikh, was a very big sheikh. And his son, Shah Abdul Qadir, was the first one to translate the Quran in from Arabic to Urdu. So he had, you know, and even today, all the translations are, you know, are some, all the Urdu translations come out of that one translation. So was a very big sheikh of his time, was a very big commentator of the Quran. And he would say, then I got the opportunity to go to the blessed grave of the Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And he said, I would stay there for very, very long periods. And I would see that people would come and they would stand in front of the blessed grave of the Messenger. And I could see Allah opened this thing for me. That when normal people would walk in front of that blessed grave, they would walk past by. But when an alim, a scholar would come, then there will be a noor which would come from out, from inside of that grave, and would enter the heart of that scholar whenever that scholar would go in front of that grave. So this is what Shah Waliullah Rahimahullah says. So the scholar in the eyes of Allah and in the eyes of the Messenger is the most respected personality. هَلْ يَسْتَوِي الَّذِينَ يَعْلَمُونَ وَالَّذِينَ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ. Can the one who knows, who has the knowledge, be equal to the one who has no knowledge? Now, but there's one thing one has to understand, that this knowledge of the deen is not like the knowledge of the dunya. The knowledge of the dunya is very simple. You learn the book, you pass the exam, you get a grade, and that's your grade. The knowledge of Islam is different. It could very well be that you learn the book, you pass the exam, and you have a very nice grade, but in the eyes of Allah, the grade is not good enough. And it could very much happen that you learned the book, but you're not able to get a very good grade. But in the eyes of Allah, you have a very high grade. Because to become an alim, there's five requirements. One, you have to have the knowledge, the ilm. Second, you have to have taqwa, fear of Allah. So So Allah Ta'ala says, innama yakhsha Allah min ibadihi al-ulama. That among the people, among the servants of Allah, those who fear Allah are the scholars. So scholar of Islam is not the one who has read books. Scholar of Islam is the one who has attributes. So the first attribute is that he should have a fear of Allah. Allah Ta'ala says in the Quran, وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهُ وَيُعَلِّمُكُمُ اللَّهُ, that you fear Allah, Allah is going to give you the knowledge. So the knowledge of Islam does not only come through books, it comes through the fear of Allah.
That fear is the word absolutely wrong. I have read so many books and there's a debatable comment on that. Fear is absolutely a wrong word.
Fear, yeah, there's many different shades of fear. When you talk about fear, it actually means staying away from sins. This is the actual meaning. When you talk about taqwa, a person of taqwa is a person who stays away from sin. Now let me give you an example. Allama Anwar Shah Kashmiri rahimahullah was a very big sheikh of his time, a very big muhaddis. He says that sometimes I would run into a problem, a question that comes up in the books that I would not be able to find any answers to. So then he says, in my time there was a man by the name of Haji Amir Shah. Haji Amir Shah was not a scholar. He had just kept the company of very pious people. He was a very muttaqi person, a person of taqwa, a person who stayed away from sins all his life. He said, when I would not find an answer, then I would ask other scholars, top scholars of the country. If they would, sometimes they would have the answer, sometimes they would also not have the answer. Then I would go through all the books that I know. And when I will be convinced that nobody in this world has an answer to this question that I have, then I go to Haji Amir Shah. A non-scholar, a person who's not a scholar, he's a muttaqi person, a person who stays away from sin. He said, when I would go in the company of Haji Amir Shah, rahimahullah, and I would start talking about other things, and I would bring up this question of mine, every time that I have done this, I have found the answer with him. So that means the knowledge of Islam is different from the knowledge of, you know, of dunya. It comes through taqwa. That is first thing. Then the second thing is it comes through adab. And what is adab? Adab is to humble yourself in front of the one who's teaching you. The Prophet ﷺ has told us, has given us this order, this commanded us. Tawaza'u, humble yourself, liman tu'allimuna bihi, in front of the one whom you have been taught by. So if you've been taught by somebody, then you have to show humbleness. If you don't show humbleness, even if you're able to finish the book and get a good grade, you will still not gain the knowledge. The knowledge of Islam is just very different. So that is why
fear, that is what fear.
That is not, yeah, again, humbleness is also fear, right? This is another shade of fear. That you feel that you should lower yourself. Because the one who's teaching is higher and one who's learning is lower. So when you lower yourself, that's when the knowledge comes inside of your heart. This is how this deen of Islam is.
Is it specific to the knowledge of deen only? Can it not be, is it not standard?
That's a very good question. So if you have the knowledge of dunya, and if you want to actually increase your knowledge of dunya also, and if you show adab, if you show humbleness to that teacher, you will gain that knowledge also more.
But this is what the problem is. We are in a state of lack of knowledge.
Yes.
That is why we are using the word fear for Allah. It's absolutely slang, what I should say. Because we cannot say fear for Allah. Mm. It's obey your obedience to Allah.
Yeah, so
fear is absolutely a very bad language for Allah. Yes.
Which fear appearance?
There so is no fear for Allah. There's a big debate, and I have studied so many books on this.
So I know this one thing. Let me tell you something. What he means to say is that you love Allah. And the way you love your mother and you love your father, what happens is when you disobey them, then you don't have fear of them. You just fear that they will be upset. So this is also another way. So you don't want to miss out on that love. So this is the fear which is in your heart, that you don't want to be away from them, or you will be, you know. So this is maybe this is what you mean.
No, I don't by mean taqwa. That. The word fear, it's according to psychology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using this word according to psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And where psychology says fear is a very bad word.
Mm-hmm.
Fear is like something which is for a negative thing. And fear with Allah, you are using a negative word with Allah.
You see,
that's absolutely, totally...
Okay, what does the word khashiyat mean?
Khashiyat is having something in your heart that will restrict you from obedience.
Okay, so Allah has used the word khashiyat.
That is among obedience.
So you can use this. So there's no problem in using this.
Yeah, but it's just because of lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
We are translating Urdu into English.
Mm-hmm.
Translating.
Mm-hmm.
Not interpreting.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the word Urdu.
Mm-hmm.
And we are translating, not interpreting. Dar with fear.
Okay, what is the meaning of the word khauf?
That is what we are translating.
Khauf means dar, right?
Khauf is dar.
Khauf is used in Arabic. And khauf is used in Urdu, right?
But
now, let me tell you. For Allah, let me tell you. In Hadith, khauf is used for Allah. The Prophet ﷺ said, "Man lam yakhifillah." The one who does not have khawf of Allah. Akhafahu Allah min kulli shay'in. Allah gives the khawf of everything in his heart. So here the Prophet ﷺ used the word khawf for Allah, right? So if the Prophet ﷺ is using, it is not something very, very out of the dictionary. You know, you're within the bounds. If you use the word fear for Allah, all these translations of the Quran are filled with the fear of Allah. So, okay, you can have a mindset. You can have a thought process where you think that, okay, fine, my fear of Allah is not the actual fear the way you fear animals. Right? The animal is going to jump on me. The lion jumps on me, I will have a fear. My fear of Allah is not like this. My fear of Allah is that if I have fear of Allah, it is because I don't want to miss out on the love that He has for me. So if you think like that, this is also a valid way of thinking. But you cannot negate this word fear. It is mentioned in Hadith. It is mentioned in the Quran. It is mentioned in the Tafasir. Many scholars use it. So you cannot say that, you know, this is because of lack of knowledge that people are using it. A lot of people are using it. A lot of scholars are using
it. They are doing wrong. They
okay.
are doing absolutely
wrong. What should be the word instead of that?
Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, this is
a
question.
That is what
this is a very good question. Yeah.
This is from Pigthall.
Okay.
And this is an authentic...
Pigthall is the first person to translate the Quran in English. So this is...
you who believe... the word for... fear is mm-hmm. observe your duty to Allah with the right observance.
That's not the actual translation, right?
This is the actual translation of
so Pigthall has used to, I mean this is fine. Observe your duty. So yeah, so this is the Arabic of this is Ya ayyuhal lazina amanu taqullaha haqqa tuqatihi. So, if you want to use this, I mean, it does not go beyond the realm of the meanings, the different meanings that you can use. But again, I think that, you know, fear is a fair word. It's not an unfair, it's not out of the, you know, it's not out of the context. You know.
It is out of question.
It's out of question.
Because so common people cannot understand that very...
No, this is very beautifully written, yeah.
Then why did Pigthall translate?
He was a very big scholar of his time.
And there are many other bigger scholars than him.
But we are common people sitting here, no? So that's why we need...
We are common, but these scholars are not common.
No, but they are from 15 years old English.
And again, I mean, if you read translation now, obviously, I mean, most of the words that those people have used, even that style of English has just gone away.
Yeah, I think the translation used here also uses. Let me just use it.
There is again one answer to that, but that would be again a big.
I fear my parents, obviously, and it's not that kind of fear. It's fear of again losing the love. Right? So again, it's a fear.
So we are losing the love.
No. Because you are what we are doing is trying to translate the word into Urdu and interpret that.
No.
Fear. If we translate fear into dar, that's not right. Right? Dar is something different. Whenever their language is obvious, I mean, a word in a language means different things. It's not important that a word fear means only the fear of something which is very, let's say, unpleasant. No, it doesn't.
Okay, so Mufti Taqi Usmani Sahib has done the translation of this. And you know Yusuf De Lorenzo, the American convert, he has done the translation, who has done most of the work on this translation. And the translation they have done here, Ya ayyuhallazina amanu taqullah, O you who believe, fear Allah. They have done this. O you who believe, fear Allah as he should be feared. Right? Ya ayyuhallazina amanu taqullah, haqqa tuqatihi. So generally, you know.
When you fear, you like reaction. That's a kind of, like when you are afraid of something, then you apply correction on yourself, that you are straying from.
This is a very beautiful understanding of the word fear. Yeah, so again. So you can.
Fear doesn't mean something bad. It's applying the correction and then joining the right path.
Exactly. So this is, again, a very good understanding of the word of fear.
Taqi had a prostate problem and he had a surgery. And Taqi said, I'm absolutely fit and healthy. He has had a prostate surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, two or three times, I know Taqi very well. If he is fit, he would have never had surgery. Prostate surgery, he has got prostate problems.
So, I mean, that does not stop him from doing the right translation, I think.
Nobody is saying I'm fit.
Huh?
He himself said I'm fit.
So he probably is fit, you know.
He's still. Yeah. And there have been banking issues with Taqi.
Yeah.
There's so many ulama here, they have been having so many debates against Taqi.
Yeah.
Since I am Dr. Asadayu, so I do talk about medicine, and to be very frank.
Okay. Okay, now let us just move forward now. Okay.
There should be an authentic person who has interpreted. And if you're talking about Taqi?
For me, he's the most authentic person, actually.
Oh, you have not studied books from international standards. My God.
Okay, let me just finish up.
He is in the most wanted list.
He's the most...
Yeah,
he's the most influential list also. Okay, let's just go back to the ayah. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim.
So the five attributes we are the other?
So there's five attributes for an alim. And the first one was, he should have taqwa. Should stay away from sins, right? Second is, he should have adab. Third thing, that he should be a person who does not run after the dunya. Now, some people have this wrong concept that running after the dunya means not to work or not to earn or not to have wealth. This is not what running after the dunya means. Running after the dunya means not remembering the akhirah, right? Because earning halal is mentioned in the hadith, the Prophet ﷺ said that earning halal livelihood is not only something which is beneficial, it is a fard on you. These are the words of hadith. So earning more, earning little, putting your time into earning a livelihood does not mean that you are a person running after the world. If you are a person running after the world, you are somebody who has forgotten the akhirah. So alim also has to have a very clear vision of the akhirah as well. So these are the three things. And the fourth thing, for an alim, which is very, very important, is that the alim should be able to do ibadat of Allah, right? What sort of an alim you are if you're not able to wake up for Fajr prayers, right? If you're not able to read the Quran, if you're not able to do azkar, if you can't remember Allah, how can you invite others towards Allah? So these are the four main, very important, you know, signs of an alim. So the ilm of the dunya, you can do without these other four things. But of the ilm of the akhirah, the ilm of Islam, or the ilm of Quran and Hadith, that ilm you can only and only achieve when you have all these other four attributes as well. And that is why sometimes you don't have much bookish knowledge, but because of your taqwa, because of your ibadat, because of your adab, and because of your, what was the fourth thing? Because of your ibadat, taqwa, adab, and not running after the world, right? So tarke dunya, because of all these things.
Alim, who is an alim?
Alim is a scholar. Let me just finish. We're actually towards the end. We'll talk after the class, inshallah. Okay, so these are the four things that are the attributes of an alim. In this class, we make dua to Allah. Then, O Allah, make us among the group of ulama. Raise us up among the group of ulama. Wa akhiru da'wana alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen. I'll do the translation one more time. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Wal takum minkum ummatun. And there should be a group of people from among you, right? Yad'una ila al-khair, who invite towards the good. Wa ya'muruna bil ma'ruf, who bid the fair. Wa yanhauna 'anil munkar, and forbid that which is not allowed. Wa ulaika humul muflihun, and it is these who are successful. So we will stop here. Subhanakallahumma bihamdika, ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. I have a very small request that we will do our question and answers, you know, in the beginning when I do the when I do the translation of the last class. That's when you can bring up your questions. I see that nobody has any questions. Today we had a question, mashallah, from this brother. So, because when I'm doing the class, instead of stopping in the middle of the class, it is better to do at the end of the class or at the beginning of the class. That is a better thing, because there's many, many people who are following this class sometimes abroad, and this brings, for us it is very